This is In Conversation from Apple News. I'm Brian Stelter, filling in for Shamita Basu. Today, who's better for the economy, Biden or Trump? One of the issues that matters the most to Americans this election is the economy. If voters are feeling good about the economy come November, that could help President Joe Biden's chances at re-election.
My inherited economy is on the brink. Now our economy is literally the envy of the world. 15 million new jobs in just 3 years. A record. A record.
But if voters aren't buying what Biden is selling, if voters aren't feeling good about the economy, that could push enough people to re-elect former President Donald Trump.
We will stop Joe Biden's inflation disaster, and we will rebuild the greatest economy in the history of the world with tax cuts, regulation cuts, energy price cuts, and interest rates cuts like you've never seen before. You know,
right now, we are still many months away from Election Day. But so far, polls about the economy don't bode well for Biden. According to a recent CBS News poll, just 38% of people feel the economy is doing well today under Biden. That compares with 64% of survey respondents who felt things were going well under Trump. But this is complicated. If you were to look at the economic indicators, they tell a different story.
So we have a lot of indicators that we're in a pretty solid, pretty strong economy, particularly in the last year.
That's Megan Lenhart, a senior writer for Barron's who covers economic issues.
We had really great GDP growth that we weren't, quite frankly, expecting to see. We have super low unemployment. We've got, you know, wage gains finally, you know, crossing the threshold where we're keeping pace with inflation. So in many cases, this is a good economy. And yet, consumers don't feel like it's a good economy.
We'll get into why voters feel this disconnect with labor economist Betsy Stevenson in a few minutes. But first, Megan recently crunched the numbers, looking back at how the economy fared under Trump and under Biden for the first 3 years of each of their presidencies. So I asked her about the contrast.
So when we look at Trump, when we look at Biden, and we try to compare the economies that they have fostered under their presidencies, I think you even have less control than like a shepherd over his flock to some extent. Mm. It really depends on what happened before you took office. And then those policies continue into years, sometimes your entire presidency. And so things like tax policy, things like the direction of, yes, the market, the direction of, you know, gross domestic product growth, all of those things were happening before you were ever sworn in, mm-hmm. and they continue abreast. And so then you have to sit there and say, okay, well, how much of it is really what we're seeing on the ground from January to January, and how much of it is things that are already in the ecosystem? And when it comes to Trump and Biden, what makes it particularly challenging is we had a recession in there. So the pandemic was its own bundle of fun, which of course screws with the data and messes with, you know, the trajectory of everything that we're looking at. But then you've also had a recession. When you have recessions, what goes down must also come up again. And of course, the trend line of that can be gradual. It can be more severe. In this case, it was more severe. So when we look at a lot of the graphs, when we look at a lot of the data for Biden, for example, we see that things are actually doing really, really well. But a lot of that is sort of a natural spring back motion that the economy undergoes when you have a recession. Mm. So it's sometimes a little bit tricky to say, well, the, you know, gross domestic product, GDP, was so much better under one over the other, because you have to take in all of those, you know, sort of echoes that are happening in that chamber.
Echoes. Hmm. Now, Megan, I know you said comparing presidents when it comes to the economy is really hard to do, but maybe we can look at some economic indicators to understand the hands that Trump and Biden were dealt and how they played them. Let's start with an indicator top of mind for most Americans, inflation. Prices are about 4% higher than they were a year ago. That's higher than the Federal Reserve's 2% target, but way down from the 9% high we saw in June 2022, driven by supply chain issues and spiking energy prices. So who handled inflation better, Trump or Biden?
Let's just put it this way. Under Trump, you had inflation at incredibly low, stable levels. Under Biden, they shot up. And there's a reason for that. Unfortunately, neither president has a ton of control over this particular scenario. So suffice to say, life, when it comes to inflation, definitely got more tricky under Biden.
Another huge economic indicator is unemployment, a major measure economists use to gauge the health of the economy. Under Biden so far, we've had unemployment rates near historic lows. Trump, on the other hand, left office with fewer jobs than when he started. But of course, he and we were all dealing with pandemic lockdowns, a time when workplaces were closed and a lot of people were laid off. So let's turn to wages. Megan, looking at the change in hourly earnings adjusted for inflation, when did wages fare better? Under Trump or under Biden?
So it's interesting because how you calculate wages creates a really interesting different responses. But looking at, you know, wages, real wages adjusted for inflation, I mean, you had stagnant wages under Trump. And really, a lot of the policies that he put into place didn't exactly help that. He was calling for a blue collar boom. We didn't necessarily see that under President Trump. Under Biden, we certainly see that, you know, we got a lot of wage growth, but unfortunately, inflation was extremely high, so it canceled out a lot of that increased purchasing power. Mm. So on a whole, I think wages is a little bit more complicated of a story in terms of how the president handled things. Mm. I want to point out one thing, and that is debt. Mm-hmm. It is a question that we're having a lot of conversations around these days, and I think it is really interesting that both administrations are birds of a feather in one regard, and that is spending and borrowing. We saw both administrations really go at it when it comes to public debt. And, you know,
there are we at now? $34.3 trillion.
We are at exactly that.
That's about $102,000 per American.
Right? I mean, that's staggering. And yet, we are still doing fine, and there are some economists out there who will tell you that there are countries with much higher debt to GDP ratios, and they are doing just fine. There's other folks who will say, well, when the bill comes due, what happens? Mm-hmm. And so I think we're still grappling with that as a country, as, you know, a society around how much debt we really want to leverage. I will say that because the Fed funds rate has been higher, interest rates have been higher, this means that the debt gets incrementally more expensive.
Quickly.
So we start to see, you know, some a little bit more hedging, a little bit more concerns around that right now.
You just mentioned people have varying comfort levels when it comes to something like leveraging national public debt. But one of the big stories this election year has also been about the vastly different ways people think about how the economy is going right now. Why is it that people's feelings about the economy aren't aligning with what the data insists is true?
It's a good question. And we've been grappling with this, particularly under President Biden, because consumer confidence, consumer sentiment has been just abysmal compared to the data. And a lot of this comes back to inflation. And so we do see that inflation makes a big difference for folks, and especially folks who have never lived through an inflationary period in their lives. And let's be honest, I'm one of them. So yes, I am very much in the camp where it's like, wow, everything just got expensive very quickly. Mm-hmm. But it's also a matter, too, you have to keep in mind that we're all talking about inflation. And I hate to say it, there is a little bit of a cause and effect echo chamber happening here where, you know, we're being inundated. And that's because the Federal Reserve's watching it very closely. This is tied to so many different things that we're looking at very closely. It's an election year. All of these indicators take on a little bit more, a bigger importance this year, perhaps, than in other years, just because we have so many things that are coming together all at once.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about historically, inflation's not very high. Globally, it's very low. I was just in Argentina. Like, there are countries where obviously inflation is off the charts and it chokes the entire system. This is, by the way, President Biden's reelection message, that this economy is the envy of the world. That's what he and his aides keep saying.
I know we talk about and we compare the U.S. to what other countries in the world are going through, but I think most American voters would say, I don't live in those other countries. And I've had a really tough time since the pandemic. And inflation has been particularly difficult for those on the lower end of the spectrum. They were the ones who got, you know, laid off. They were the ones who, you know, did have some of the stimulus, sure, but that certainly didn't cover all of their bills. And then they had massive inflation on top of that. They can't buy homes. They can't do a lot of the things that they want because really, I mean, the vast majority of consumer spending, which does power about 70% of GDP, is coming from those higher income households. It's the folks that are sort of saying, hey, you know, what about me? I think that we really need to be concerned about when we start talking about consumer sentiment going into the political landscape that we find ourselves in.
I wanted to get a deeper sense of the disconnect between how things are by the numbers versus how voters feel about the state of the economy. So I called up Betsy Stevenson. She's now a labor economist at the University of Michigan, and she was, back in the Obama years, the chief economist at the Department of Labor. We talked over video conference.
Really, the economy is just us. We are the economy. So when we say, what's the economy, it's really, how are we doing? What's our well-being level? It's not even our financial health. It's really, how are you experiencing your life?
Inflation has made so many people feel like they are taking a step backward. This is true across income levels. But if you look at the data, it has hit upper middle class folks particularly hard. These are households earning a bit over $150,000 a year, according to census data. Though these people are better able to weather higher prices, their incomes haven't fully kept up.
I'm a professor at the University of Michigan. The University of Michigan looked at that 9% inflation and was like, so sorry, we're not raising faculty wages 9%. I mean, I have colleagues out there who are like complaining because they're literally being paid less than they were 5 years ago once you account for inflation.
Meanwhile, a lot of blue-collar workers have actually seen their wages rise significantly during this time. In 2022, income inequality dropped for the first time in 15 years. But Betsy said it doesn't feel like much of a win for them either.
That frustrates the heck out of people because they're looking at their wages going up and they're like, finally, I should be able to buy more. But their wages are going up because of inflation. Then they turn around and they see the prices are higher at the store because of inflation and they're furious. But in reality, the same forces are driving both up.
Inflation is such a global phenomenon that it can be hard to directly attribute blame or credit to a president's policies. But Betsy says that one policy decision in particular certainly made it worse than it had to be.
I think if we're asking how did a president handle inflation forces come from around the globe, and then they have to handle them. And Trump acted as if it didn't matter that we had inflation. He put in place a bunch of tariffs.
Those tariffs were up to 30% on things like washing machines, solar panels, steel, and aluminum. And Chinese-made goods like baseball hats, sneakers, and TVs.
If I have a criticism of the Biden administration, it was that in the face of inflation, he should have removed the Trump tariffs. Well, that would have lowered prices for Americans. The Trump tariffs increased prices for Americans. So Trump was actively taking policies to try to increase inflation. I think in general, Biden has faced remarkable price pressure from around the globe that has raised prices for Americans, and he's taken a lot of actions that have brought those prices down.
So that's Betsy's econ professor analysis. But when it comes to how voters see these policies,
voters gave Trump a lot of credit for those steel tariffs. Now, in reality, those steel tariffs ended up costing us a lot of jobs. They didn't add very many steel jobs. The research is now clear on that we didn't gain steel jobs, but we did lose manufacturing jobs. But what we do see is that Trump and Republicans gained vote share where it was perceived that those steel tariffs might have added jobs. So listen for the policies. If they say, like, I'm going to make it harder to import stuff from China, you might like that idea. Just remember that it's going to mean you pay more at the grocery store, at Walmart, at all the places in which you buy things that are imported from other countries. Sometimes we're happy to do things that support our ideals against our wallet. And I think people voting for Trump, they're not really voting for their wallet. They're actually voting for their ideals.
While Betsy is critical of Trump for his tariff policy, she does give him credit for providing swift relief during the pandemic.
Oh my God, I have never seen Congress and a president move as quickly as they did at the start of the pandemic to get relief to families. And that is something that Trump deserves credit for, the Republicans deserve credit for. And anytime you think that American politicians cannot work together, that, you know, the idea of bipartisan legislation is done for, let's just think back to how quickly they moved to get relief to the American people in the face of the pandemic.
In addition to pandemic relief and levying those tariffs against China, the Trump years are also remembered for his tax cuts for corporations and the wealthy, and a new trade deal with Canada and Mexico. Biden's record is still being written. But to date, his accomplishments include the Inflation Reduction Act and the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, which together have funneled nearly $450 billion toward transportation, energy, and broadband internet projects, mostly in states where Biden lost to Trump in 2020. Biden has also offered billions of dollars in student debt relief, and he's been very publicly friendly to unions during a period of time when we've seen huge efforts to collectively bargain for better wages and working conditions.
So if you're thinking about your investments in the stock market, with the corporate tax cuts, is a great time to be under President Trump. Under President Biden, it was a great time to be an hourly worker.
So I asked Megan, where does all this leave voters who are trying to decide what's best for them between Biden and Trump?
I think Biden has actually stuck pretty closely with a lot of his campaign promises and the policies that he wanted to put forward. A lot of the policies and legislation that were passed so far under the Biden administration have been about making investments for more jobs, for job retraining, for a lot of those things. Now, we don't really have a cohesive economic plan from the Trump camp at the moment. Certainly, you know, he's talked a lot about tariffs so far. He's talked a lot about different things, but we haven't seen a cohesive plan yet. Arguably, we've seen a more cohesive plan from President Biden simply because he just gave the State of the Union. So we have a good sense that Biden really just expects to continue this trend. Now, arguably, that could be good news. That could be bad news. You know, a lot depends, unfortunately, on monetary policy, which comes from the Federal Reserve, independent agency. And so this may actually be an interesting year. If we don't see rate cuts, arguably markets could not do very well. We could see some pullback in other areas, investment. You know, businesses are saying, hey, you know, we're kind of waiting on this. And if we don't see it, we're not going to sit there and do the massive hiring. We're not going to do the massive investments. So it really kind of depends. We'll have to wait and see in September where we stand. I feel like a lot of people don't realize it, but most voters actually vote on pocketbook issues very close to the election.
Meaning what they're feeling right now in March is not what they might be feeling in October.
Exactly.
So let's see what happens this fall. What will be top of mind for you personally heading into November?
I'm going to be looking at things like spending patterns. I think across both administrations, we've seen perhaps a bit too hot when it comes to spending. There does seem to be a bit of a default around let's spend to have a better economy. That can work. We've seen it in action. It does do well. Certainly, the government stimulus checks were very successful in that respect. But there are some drawbacks there. I think, too, I'm going to be looking for things like Betsy pointed out, tariffs and some of those, you know, geopolitical factors. They do come home to roost and those chickens are out there. They're running around. And we got to see, you know, what both administrations are willing to do to kind of corral those and hopefully make the economy stronger for a sustainable period for all of us.
So it's always the economy, stupid. That's what it always is.
Always the economy, stupid.
Although my son says you never use the word stupid. They taught him that at preschool. So it's the economy, smarties. That's what it is. Betsy Stevenson is a professor of labor economics at the University of Michigan. Megan Lenhart is a senior economics writer for Barron's. We'll link to Megan's charts in our show notes page. Next week, I talk with Ezra Klein about why so many Americans feel like our political system isn't working and ways we can fix it.
I think it would be very strange to look at American politics in the year of one's Lord, 2024, and say, we nailed this. No changes needed. No notes.
Follow Apple News in Conversation in the podcast app to catch that conversation next week.